Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hey, this is Adam from Toronto, and I support Creative Control because Vish is full stop one of the best arts interviewers in Canada, or anywhere in the world, really. He approaches every episode like he's known the artist for years, creating a conversational atmosphere that gets straight to the heart of the work. No one else in podcasting gets it quite right like he does, with a mixture of meticulous research, wise artistic insights, and well-humored personal connections. I proudly support Vish and Creative Control on Patreon. You should too.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Deja SB is a talented hip-hop artist based in Toronto, Ontario. Though they just released a fresh EP called Tasty Raps Volume 1 on September 17th, 2021, an earlier 8-song release from April called Head Above the Waters has raised Deja's profile considerably after making it onto the shortlist of 10 albums nominated for Canada's annual Polaris Music Prize, about a month ahead of the September 27th awards ceremony revealing the Polaris Music Prize winner. Deja and I connected to discuss living in Toronto and Caribbean cuisine, things they learned about themselves and the world during the COVID-19 pandemic, hip-hop assertiveness and vulnerability, their history with the music and culture, and how they fit within its current state, understanding Kanye West, the sound and tone of Head Above the Waters, future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. This is the 638th episode of Creative Control, featuring the very thoughtful and very talented Deja SB with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Now the labels want me cause I'm popping and the flow be nice. Give it a rest, step back unless you giving me checks. My life imperfect but I live it the best while still keeping it fresh. I'm as different as different guests. The bars hit you like a kick in the chest. I don't fall.
Hi, Deja. How are you?
I'm good. How's it going, man?
Oh, it's well. Thank you very much. Thanks for asking. You know, not everyone asks. It's interesting. I always it's an interesting thing. It's often Americans, and I've been calling them out a little bit on it for fun. But very few people will say, "Hey, how are you?" And they just assume I'm fine. I guess I appreciate your interest in my well-being. That's all I wanted to say right off the top. Thank you.
Yeah, you should not assume anybody's fine right now.
Exactly. That's exactly right. How do they know how I'm doing? It's not fair. Anyway, no, it's nice to speak with you. First of all, I guess, or second of all, third of all, I don't know where we are in the conversation. Where in the world are you today?
I'm in Toronto, downtown Toronto.
Nice. How are things going in downtown Toronto by your estimation?
They're going, for sure. it looks pretty decent, but you never know, man. You never know.
I mean, that's fair to say about Toronto at the best of times. my feeling as an Ontario, I don't think we've ever met. I don't know if you know anything about me, but I used to live in Ontario and only moved to Alberta for sort of family and work reasons at the beginning of 2020. And then, of course, there was the pandemic. So I felt very isolated from everything, but I do occasionally miss Ontario. And I lived in Guelph, Ontario. Have you ever been to Guelph?
I have been to Guelph, yeah.
Did you do a show?
I think I was just out there to chill.
Oh, yeah. It is a nice place to chill, isn't it? It's like a small town. Do you have people out there? You have friends?
Yeah, I believe I had a friend out there that was just hanging out and partying and had a place there for the weekend.
Yeah. So that's where I lived for most of my life, actually. I'm from nearby, and then I moved there for school. Anyway, so I do miss Ontario. And I used to go into Toronto all the time. Are you from Toronto originally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from Toronto.
Whereabouts exactly?
So I grew up in the West End of Toronto my entire life. Then last 2 years, I moved out to Brampton.
Nice.
So further west. And then recently moved back to downtown Toronto.
Oh, nice. I like Brampton. Brampton's all right, isn't it? I enjoy Brampton.
It's a nice little suburb.
Yeah.
It's really big, to be honest. But
it's a massive, massive suburb. It's barely a suburb. It's its own little constellation. I mean, there's a lot.
I swear.
There's a lot going on in Brampton. And for my money, maybe the best Indian food this side of India. I liked going into Brampton just to get some good Indian food because it's the closest I have to my mom's cooking. My mom is in Cambridge, but where I was born and raised. But I always judge restaurants by how close they are to my mom's because my mom was kind of...
Yes.
My mom is regarded as a great Indian cook among her colleagues and associates. I make it sound like she's running a business, but you know what I mean. The other Indian people are like, oh, yeah, if Vijay is cooking, we know it's going to be good kind of thing. So
yeah, it's a good shit.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Do you have like a cultural food? What is your background in that regard?
I'm Grenadian, so Caribbean background. We do a lot of oxtail. We have one dish called oil down, which is basically a concoction of things. There's dumpling, there's yam, there's pig feet, there's fish sometimes. It's a whole bunch of shit just put together.
Pig feet? Who looks at the feet of an animal and suggests... Like that is the ultimate in not being wasteful. All right, well, we've eaten everything else. What's left? The feet. I mean, that's my impression.
Yep.
Are pig feet, is that tasty? Is that a particularly tasty part of the pig?
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I feel like it trickles down to our ancestors not having enough.
Yeah.
And just using every resource of the animal that they can. But I think it's actually not that, it's very salty, obviously. Mm. But I enjoy it. I like it.
You said obviously. Is that because all the sweat from the pig, it ends up welling around the feet, right? That's why it's so salty. I'm sorry.
Pigs are pretty
I was not expecting to make wisecracks about pig feet, and now I'm thrown. I've never had it, so I don't know if texturally is it meaty? Is it fleshy? Or is it, I mean, I think of pig.
Yeah, it's very fleshy. But the way I eat it, I don't eat the flesh part. I always like the parts where the flesh is kind of off of it and it's just kind of the meat inside.
Right.
So anytime I get a piece that's like really fleshy, I'm like, nah, I'm not eating that part.
Right, right. And I mean, pigs don't have hooves, do they? I can't think of a pig's foot. They don't. I don't think. They just have like normal feet, right?
Yeah, yeah. Little normal pig feet.
Little normal pig feet. Yeah, there you go. All right. So do you, and I mean, I bring this up only because I guess I'm discussing the multicultural cuisine that is available to people in that part of Ontario. Do you get to, you know, partake of your, I guess, cultural cuisine a lot just being around in Toronto? I think I'm guessing the answer is yes. There's lots of options. Is that fair?
Yeah, they have like every option, to be honest.
So I was just going to say, do you have yourself a favorite cultural cuisine that isn't your own? Because I know during this pandemic, for the longest time, only until recently, my family and I had not been eating anything from the outside. Mm-hmm. Takeout, whatever. I mean, obviously, maybe it's not obvious to some people, but restaurants were a no-go. And then I started to be like, I'm probably being a little uptight. Is it possible to be? Is it possible to be uptight during a pandemic? I mean, it's a pandemic, for crying out loud. Shouldn't you be a little concerned about things? So, like, my thing is, don't you have? Are you like a little like I'm not doing stuff? Are you more like that, or are you like whatever?
Well, 100%, I'm not doing stuff.
Right. Okay. You're hunkering down.
Yeah, definitely. Since the first lockdown.
Right. Exactly. So I'm the same. You and I are similar in that regard, because you ever been to a restaurant or ordered food and then you don't feel good, and then someone says, oh, you probably got a little food poisoning, or sometimes you might even get like a cold or a flu or something, mm-hmm. and you're like, I don't know what it was. I just ate from that restaurant. And they say, oh, well, maybe the person preparing your food had something, and then they got into the food. And then and I was like, that's the logic I applied to pandemic dining generally. I'm like, because they remember in the early days, they're like, don't share food with people. You know, it was all about washing your hands. Don't go to your family's house and share food. And that share food thing really stuck with me. You know, like who knows who's touching your food? Does that sound paranoid, or do you agree?
No, definitely on the same page. But I don't know the science behind, like, if you can catch that shit by people preparing your food. I don't know the science.
No, I don't either. But some of us have gotten food poisoning. And then when you talk to people, you know, from a restaurant, I mean, and people say, well, but you know, what were the sanitary conditions? What was the hygiene like at that place? And so that's where it sounds like you and I are on the same page. And at this point, I'm wondering, can you talk to my in-laws? Because they think I'm some sort of coward, you know, and I don't feel like a coward. I'm just trying to be sensible. I have little children. They have no vaccinations because they're not old enough. I'm trying to protect my family. Doesn't that make sense?
Better to be overprepared.
Yes.
Than underprepared.
Good. Okay, good. We're on the same page. That's good. Okay. Well, I appreciate that, and I'm sorry. I mean, on some level, Toronto and Ontario, certainly, I don't know if you've been following the news, Alberta has no restrictions at all. They're just like, it's normal, but it's not. You know, everything's climbing.
No.
Ontario vibes, as we're speaking, like, as a performer, as someone who I think thrives on being a musician and playing in front of people, I'm guessing. Do you feel like things are opening up in a way that feels promising to you? Like, do you think you'll be performing anytime soon?
Yeah, I have a few performances actually lined up for August and September, but I don't know how confident I am that after that there will be more. Just because when we look at like the vaccination rates, especially, we gotta continue a certain trend until we're just like, okay, yeah, it's kind of deemed appropriate to be able to be out and not be scared that the person beside you is not vaccinated. So we have to reach a certain point before that starts becoming the norm.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're at that point yet. And then you got to think about the variants too. The variants are what's scary to me, because this thing keeps mutating. It was already something that we had no idea how to conquer.
Yeah.
And it took a long time to be able to find a sort of semi-solution. And then everybody is, because of the misinformation floating around, they're skeptical beyond the norm, to be honest. Yeah. From what I see, at least, skeptical beyond the norm. So it's going to be difficult to because we have to keep up a certain trend, you know?
Yeah, yeah, so
I don't see, like, it's very unpredictable. Like, a new strain drops every week. So that becomes stronger in resistance to the vaccine, so.
Yeah, it used to be, I used to like Kanye West's Good Fridays, where he would drop a new track every week, but yeah. Now you're right. Now there's a new, this is like Bad Fridays. There's a new variant every week.
Yeah.
Terrible. Terrible, terrible situation. I don't know if you've encountered this kind of, like, you're talking about people's mindsets and wrapping their heads around what's going on and how best to deal with things. In your cultural community, among musicians, in your family life, do you encounter that kind of skepticism? Like, is that giving you pause that, like, the people around you seem a little lax or like you said, cynical, skeptical about the science and how and our way forward? Like, are you encountering much of that on a personal level among your colleagues or your family?
I see a bit of it within my family, but once I give them the information, then it goes to, okay, I've gotten this information and I understand now. So I'll move forward from that. But with a lot of people I see, especially online, they're getting the information, the right information, and they're still holding down and doubling down on not taking it, wanting to have some sort of thinking that it's more so that it's the agency over their body.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course you have agency over your body, but this is also not like a political thing at all. And I feel like all of the politicians and all the government and the media framing this as a political thing instead of what it is, which is a health concern, a major health, worldwide health concern.
Yeah.
Is a lot of the problem. And then, like, people are purposely spreading misinformation to cause civil unrest. And, like, there's literally articles and studies of the proof that, like, people from other countries that I will not name are literally purposely spreading misinformation to people via the algorithm of, like, Facebook or Twitter or YouTube.
Yeah.
And that's causing civil unrest between communities and between the government and its people. And that kind of thing works.
Yeah.
And it's just sad because, again, this is it's not an individual thing anymore. It never was, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
And, people are so frustrated and want to get back to some sort of normalcy, but you have to do your part.
Can't
complain and be one of those people that are anti-vax or not trying to follow the rules. I think about it like, I give this example. We're not pissed at the government for putting up red lights or stop signs. It's to protect us, right?
Well, yeah, but I think some people are actually upset about that kind of stuff. You know, any kind of regulation or oversight. Like, this is the ultimate manifestation of that libertarian kind of scofflaw mentality, I guess. Like, mm-hmm. I don't have to obey the rules. Like, these rules are arbitrary. And, like, I come from sort of subcultural mindsets where I believe in some of those things, but ultimately I also come from, I don't know, some measure of boomer hippiedom where you're like, well, we have to do what's best for everyone, not just what ourselves. I guess I can hear how what's going on is informing your decision making as a person, but what about artistically? Is any of this stuff infiltrating your writing or your work right now?
If anything, it's kind of inspiring it, especially during the first lockdown. I had all the time in the world to kind of write and do whatever and engage with whatever I wanted, because I didn't feel bad about not doing anything because nobody else was doing anything or performing or anything like that. So for me, and I say this very much with privilege, it's actually been a kind of like a small little gift. And especially when we had the first lockdown, I was really, really on like my last leg in terms of working a retail job. And I was literally asking the universe for some sort of break. And sucks that this is what it had to be. But I know that for a lot of people like me, who are introverted. We had the privilege of also working a job that either paid us to stay home or just paid us in general. So yeah. I do know that I am very, very privileged. I haven't caught COVID, and it has also allowed me to be a lot more creative because I just have the time to be creative.
Yeah. I don't want to bypass what I think is some breaking news, which is that you asked the universe to pause everything, and then we got a pandemic.
Might have been
so
my fault.
It seems to me that you asked for this, and you got. I've been making the same joke because our whole family moved in January 2020, and you know, the kids were obviously feeling like, oh, I'm going to miss everything at home. In Ontario, and people would say to me, like, Vish, like, you know, you would go to concerts, you'd go to restaurants, aren't you going to miss all that stuff? And then 2 months later, there was nothing to miss.
Mm-hmm.
So selfishly, it's been kind of a perfect, I'm, by the way, same as you, privileged, can work from home, have a kind of computer job that they, you know, I mean, I've been advocating for this for years. Like, why are, having worked jobs where I would be like taking a laptop from Guelph to the CBC in Toronto for 4 years, like the same laptop.
Yeah.
And unplugging it in one city at 6 a.m, plugging it in Toronto at 9 a.m. or 8:30 whenever the train decided to get me there, and then taking it back and not getting home till 7. And then my wife is dealing with the child, at the time it was just our son. You know, I was always like, this seems wrong, like everything I'm doing just requires the internet. Again, very privileged position. So I'm with you. Like, I guess that's part of my conversation, like when I have conversations about stuff like this with artists and people on the show, like what we've learned in terms of, you know, how we can function. Are there aspects of what we've learned that you would like to see continue as we, because we've had these weird moments of normalcy or calls for normalcy, and like, what are the, you know, are people going to go back to their office jobs, or are they going to, you know, be able to work remotely? Like, all these sorts of conversations are starting to pop up now as we've had brief glimmers, or not brief, like there's, I mean, you look at America. Do you follow basketball at all, Deja?
Yeah,
so I follow basketball. Wasn't it surreal to watch the playoffs and see like 19,000 people in an arena?
Yeah, it was strange.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
So there's, it was, like it made me a little uncomfortable, and my anxiety, which I try to keep under control, started to rise even just watching. There was the tension of the games, and then they'd do these, I think it was Spike Lee who was filming a lot of the, he was making these little videos. I don't know if you heard about this, but he was making these little videos for the NBA because all of a sudden they would go to these like 4K fan shots, like right up in the audience's faces. And you were just, I was like, oh, this is, I'm not comfortable. Like, or was I maybe just feeling FOMO? Like, I can't decide. Like, how come they get to do that? And we're all in Canada. Like, no, no, we can't do that. Anyway, I'm going off on I started a question, and then I went on a tangent, and that's something I do. My question, I think, was, would you like to see the things that have been working well for us as a society during this pandemic, would you like to see them continue? And if so, what to you has seemed like any kind of bright spot during this pause? Because you acknowledge, like, you got to have time off, in a sense. You got to have time, I should say, to yourself. Anyway, is there stuff you'd like to see continue? Or is there anything you can't wait to get to doing again? You know where I'm coming from here?
Well, if you think about it, in the beginning of the pandemic, there was a lot of empathy from companies. So an example is my car insurance stopped charging me for a few months.
Wow.
Yeah. And my credit card stopped charging me interest. And then if you think about SERP, and just how stimulating the economy, just how people are willing to not work and get less, or not less money. Some people are willing to not work and get SERP because they're literally getting paid less money to work their asses off.
Yeah.
Day in, day out for a company that the CEO got a bailout and they had to stay home. And, there are just so many levels of of things that got exposed during this pandemic, just corporate greed, just how much of us are in poverty and one, two missed paychecks from homelessness.
Yeah.
And also just how much the working class is holding this economy together by like a string. So a lot of the things that I would could like to continue to see is like talking about just universal
basic income.
Yeah, basic income.
Yeah, UBI, so that is, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, something that definitely should be looked into just to stimulate the economy, since a lot of people lost their jobs and a lot of people lost money. And if you're willing to work, you should be getting paid more than the government will give you monthly. And that will force the people that are paying the wages to up them, because otherwise nobody will work for them, right?
Well, yeah. And I think what you're getting at, too, is like, I don't think we've really had a chance to reconcile the anger we should all be feeling about the false economy.
Like, right.
They found this money for people when, like, it did, I don't know about you, but when I started to see CERB and like you're talking about, companies saying, you know what, we don't have to charge you. Well, if you don't have to charge us, like, we get it. Like, these are extenuating circumstances, but like, why is there homelessness?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you, if you can find this money all of a sudden to help people who need it, where is this money usually?
Exactly.
Like, and so I feel like we haven't really dealt with that. It kind of, to me anyway, I'm sure there are people that are like, okay, finally the jig is up.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like for me anyway, as a working parent, it's just trying to get through each day and negotiate which news outlets I'm going to get information from and trust. And so it's, you know, it's still sort of bread and circus. Like, we're still pretty distracted by everything, which is, I think, what certainly governments and corporations are hoping we will be distracted and afraid as much as possible, so they can do what they do without us being like, hey, wait a second, what are you doing?
Right.
And,
yeah.
But I feel like this was a great reckoning, but it also felt a bit fleeting. Am I wrong? Like, are you starting to get a sense, like, the stuff you're talking about, you know, universal basic income, really scrutinizing, I guess, what I'm talking about, like, where is the money coming from? Where does it go? Mm-hmm. Why do you have it sometimes? Why can you help us sometimes, but sometimes you say you can't?
Yep.
Is that bubbling up? Like, do you feel like more conversations like that are happening?
Definitely. I think a lot of people are frustrated. Yeah, because it doesn't make sense. You pull out the money to save the beloved economy, but where is it when people are suffering?
Yeah.
In general. Yeah, I really put into perspective that I, as much as I am very much privileged to be in this country, it's really actually a shitty one. And I think the world is just ran by such evil corporations and officials, and everybody, like, when I don't understand how this pandemic has not made people understand how much we need each other more than ever. We will not survive past anything we're supposed to survive if we do not, like, come together and start believing things like science and all of the things that have been literally implemented that have not worked. Like, we have significant science that says, like, policing doesn't really work.
Mm-hmm.
We have significant science that says climate change is about to fuck us up. All of these things are right in our faces, but we don't deal with them until something really tragic happens. I don't understand why it's not prevent and instead of deal with, you know?
So
I feel like a lot of people are frustrated. And I already said I feel like a class war is bubbling. Like, we all saw how the economy literally crumbled because people couldn't work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who's to know what's next to come out of the woodwork to immobilize us again and have us stuck in the house?
Yeah. Yeah. That's where the I question the forces that are truly calling for a return to normalcy. Because I feel like there's some, like, there's obviously some serious anxiety and mental health stuff that we need to deal with. I know keeping my children home for virtual school for all of last year likely had some detrimental effects on them. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they were trying to socialize online. There's a lot of that going on now with technology. And when I talk to teachers, they're like, yeah, well, in class wasn't much better. Like, there's a pandemic. It's very stressful for everyone. You know, mm-hmm. kids were having to wear masks. Like, it wasn't normal. So I think that's a reckoning we have to deal with. And it's just a lot going on. Now, I want to get to you in this regard, because the narrative around you and your work and the things you rap about, write about, talk about, the narrative I pick up on is that you're a very personal writer and you're not squeamish about discussing your own struggles. But I don't want to, this is again a narrative, I've never spoken with you about it. So can you speak to that? Is that the right track? Is that true? How would you characterize the things some of the things you discuss from a personal nature in your work? Can you do that?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you're on the right track, definitely. I've always been kind of a vulnerable person beyond the music, just mm-hmm. speaking about my experiences with anything I feel is relatable, but especially like mental health. So I believe as myself, as a vessel, addressing those problems that I deal with out loud, just so that one person that doesn't know how to deal with it at all kind of has that reassurance that they're not alone. It's a gift and a curse, because you're really kind of exposing yourself to a very cruel world. People are not the nicest. And they will use your vulnerabilities to their advantage. But I feel like the good outweighs the bad. In that sense, yeah. If I can help at least one person with my music get through what it is that they're dealing with, the same way that my favorite artists have kind of helped me get through things, then I feel like I'm fulfilling what I've been brought on earth to do.
Right.
And yeah, I see vulnerability as a strength, and I feel like we have a lot of stigma against some of the more negative emotions, but the way I view things really helps me navigate my journey. And if it can help somebody else navigate their journey, then why not? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, growing up, when I was a kid and rap and hip hop were, I think, still kind of emergent forces. This is kind of like in the 80s, I guess. I think I initially viewed it as a celebratory music. Mm-hmm. Over time, and the music I tended to gravitate towards, it was a lot of whatever much music was feeding me. Mm-hmm. But in those days, it was like Run DMC, Beastie Boys, Public Enemy, Tribe Called Quest mm-hmm. were the things that really popped out to me. And I think in retrospect, like, I understood it as celebratory. Public Enemy was an interesting example because they were very, I think, the most overtly political, so to speak, or outspoken about issues. And I think trying to urge people to celebrate something collectively. But in retrospect, I feel like all of that supposed celebration was steeped in pain and trauma, collective trauma. And then it got more and more personal as rappers. I think rappers tended to talk mm-hmm. very tough and assertively and in your face. Mm-hmm. And I see it in my kid sometimes now where he's kind of bragging about something. Mm-hmm. But if I look deeper into his eyes, I realize he's kind of overcompensating. There's something underneath that, you know, like an insecurity or an uncertainty. Like, it comes across as brash. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm painting hip hop with a broad brush, but do you see where I'm coming from? Like, I feel like a lot of we for the longest time, until the last 10, 15 years maybe, we viewed hip hop as almost like professional wrestling, just like mm-hmm. kayfabe. Like, I am so tough, you can't mess with me, I will destroy you. And then gradually we got rappers and artists who were a little more vulnerable and emotional and mm-hmm. talking about their personal struggles more, which was like their deep personal struggles. Where do you fit? Because mm-hmm. I feel like you are in this latter category, but are you steeped in that first wave at all of like, I'm just better than everyone kind of stuff. And also we need to celebrate together. Sorry, this wasn't really a question. I just did a little Wikipedia entry about what I think hip hop is. But does any of what I'm saying resonate with you and your own trajectory as an artist and as a fan, I think, of hip hop?
No, definitely. You hit it kind of quite on the nail. Like if you kind of go back to the why hip hop kind of started, it was to party. But then it did. And it always was a way to express disdain of the corporations and the police, especially.
Yeah.
Anything that was kind of felt like they were discriminating against us. It's always been about that. As much as it's been about the partying.
Yeah, like speaking out on oppression and also trying to find the joy in life, like that's something I always took from it. Like, yes, shit is horrible for us, and we could be mired in that, or we could try to find, we could try to express the joy we feel for each other and for life, and, while still talking about that stuff. And maybe that is a more succinct way of what I was trying to put forth earlier, but I think that's there.
Yeah, and that's definitely kind of what I try to kind of push as well in my music. It's definitely aligned with that message.
How did you first get into hip hop? Do you have any sense, memory of what turned you on to it as a musical form? Again, presumably as a fan before you became, you know, a practitioner, so to speak. But as a fan, do you remember who or what, you know, turned your head and thought, oh, what is this? This is interesting.
Yeah, it was definitely the West Coast guys. So Eazy, Dr. Dre. I was kind of more so interested in the beef between them.
Between them? Like between Cube and
Eazy?
Yeah, all those guys. Oh, okay. Interesting.
And how kind of they express themselves and what...
No pun intended.
Yeah.
NWA, sorry.
Express themselves on what they thought was like what the other person was doing. Terrible. Right. Yeah, as a kid, that kind of fascinated me. And then as I got older, my palate kind of grew and I started listening to the East Coast guys. So it's Nas, Wu-Tang, all those guys. And then grew up a little more and started listening to the more emotional guys, the Kanyes, the Kid Cudis. And but it did start with finding like the West Coast artists and falling in love with that side of the genre.
As a fan... I mean, as a fan of anything, when you become a student and a fan and at some point maybe even a scholar of whatever you're into, so to speak, you know, you become sort of an expert if you get deep into it. This sort of delineation I'm making between collective expression, almost like community news reporting in rap and hip hop, to more introspective, it's like sort of self-awareness, almost self-diagnosis, like just talking about yourself constantly, as opposed to maybe as a representative of a community. Do you have a sense of where that shift started to occur? That this notion of like, instead of talking about a whole community of people, literally either my city, my total cultural community, if you will, to I'm going to talk about myself a lot more. Like, to me, is that a false shift? Like, maybe people have always been doing that, but I don't know. Do you have a sense of where it sort of comes from?
I feel like once corporations got a hold of, once rap became popular, like the more popular genre, that's probably where the floodgates kind of opened for anybody to kind of use it as a way to express themselves. But It's always been like there's always been that kind of braggadocious era that was paired also with the other pieces of content. But yeah, it does really feel kind of self-serving.
Okay, so we're kind of getting into it now. I get into weird zones with people about hip hop these days because I think some of us relate to it more than we ever did. Some of us are struggling to see the substantive aspects of it or the skill level. And you sound kind of old when you start to be like, oh, well, this isn't like Raekwon, Ghostface. Like those are technically great rappers. Some of the people popping off today are barely saying anything. Like, literally, mm-hmm. they're not saying much in the sense of, like, what is this? Like, what am I supposed to take away from this? But they're also, like, they're barely bars. They're there's barely any text, if you will. Mm-hmm. But does that make it... Do you have a perspective on that? Like, you know, I hate to... I'm not a golden era of hip-hop person. I think it's a... One of the things that appeals to me about hip-hop is that it's always evolving and changing. But mm-hmm. at the same time... I will watch someone that everyone's talking about, and sometimes, like, I love your latest record, particularly Head Above the Waters, but I think in my mind it has touchstones. Like, I hear Biggie. I hear, I just hear people that I think are of the highest quality, Hall of Fame. Mm. But for some people, like, I have a friend whose son described Wu-Tang as old man rapping. and that kind of threw me, because I'm like, but that to me is the epitome, you know, Andre 3000, like these people who could do things with the form and take it places that seemed impossible, like just like mm-hmm. like no one can do this. And now there are times where I'm listening to someone that everyone's talking about, I'm like, this feels kind of easily attainable. This does not seem mm-hmm. extraordinary to me. Mm-hmm. So I want you to judge me for my comments. Tell me if I am, in fact, an old man, or do you relate to anything I'm saying?
I relate, but I guess that's because I'm old, too. So,
I get the impression you and I are about the same age. That's my based on what you're saying, because I have the same sort of touchstones in terms of that. So is that when you, if someone were to say, oh, yeah, DJ SP, that's kind of old school. Would you, what do you make of that?
When it comes to the average rap fan who is being fed what the Billboard charts deems as rap, mm-hmm. I don't think they would say that about me, but there is this misconception that if you're writing over beats that are more like how you classify it as like boom bap, or they're not more so like trap influenced, that what you're making is garbage. When that's not true, there are lots of trap artists that make very good music, actually. And as you said, it's just with the it just goes with the times. Like, the newer artists are making what they're making based off of what they know.
Yeah.
And the only way it kind of gets annoying is when they start to kind of act like the older music heads are just hating on them, or they don't want to pay homage to the people that kind of paved the way, or like saying, yeah, nobody's listening to Wu-Tang Clan anymore, or blah, 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 blah. I'm like, yo, they literally have a cult fan base, and that's based off of them literally changing the landscape of hip hop and being that good that people just want to support them well into their 80s. So
Wu-Tang is my favorite thing, and I love every aspect of it to some extent. I mean, there's obviously, maybe not obviously, but there's problematic aspects to hip-hop in terms of that era particularly, where just the subject matter, every once in a while you're listening to a record, you're like, whoa, this verse is not, this verse was probably never cool. How did I let this slide? Right. You ever have that?
Oh,
you're
100%.
Like, whoa. Yeah, that's a weird part of it too. But I think that's true of all genres. It's not just hip-hop. You're just like, Jesus, like, this artist I love is saying the most terrible shit.
Yeah.
And we just let it slide until someone is like, you didn't really home in on that thing where they said that thing. And you're like, oh, yeah, right. Yeah, it's bad. But anyway, sorry. Yeah, I mean, I hear in your production choices even, you know, you mentioned boom bap and some other sort of stylistic signifiers, but like, you're working on this record, the one where, you know, Head Above the Waters, the most recent release, primarily with Cheap Limousine. Who is Cheap Limousine?
He's a gentleman. He's actually a producer out in Milan that I just randomly found on the internet and literally changed my whole sound and helped me develop the sound that I'm enjoying the most right now.
Hmm. Yeah. And what is it about? And I mean, you've also got my colleague, my associate. This is going back to my mom's Indian food. Mm-hmm. My pal Harrison is also on a couple of tracks too, mm-hmm. and they work like those two sort of aesthetics. I think at least those two. I'm just scanning here. You've got some people doing verses, features, mm-hmm. but the production really works. Can you characterize that? Like, what is it about that sound that appeals to you as opposed to... I was just like, over the weekend, I was listening to Life of Pablo by Kanye mm-hmm. West. And I think your records have put me in the mood to check out other artists. Because on this record, you quote Kanye West's song, Gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I love My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. It's very mm-hmm. hard. Do you have trouble with Kanye? Is it hard to talk lovingly about Kanye right now?
Not for me, no. Because... I have far too much empathy for yes. the guy. Also, I tell people that that's my problematic fave. That's my one problematic fave. Like, people listen to people that are like abusers and like rapists.
Yes.
So I'm going to definitely continue to support Kanye just because like he said some harmful shit to our community, probably during a bipolar meltdown. Like, I'm not gonna fucking shun the guy. Yeah. He's, you know,
I just have a lot of empathy for him.
But do you think, like, there's the shit he said that's harmful to the community. There's stuff he's done. Is the Trump stuff, you know, a bridge too far? Is that part of his mental health stuff? Like, I feel like when someone starts to espouse political views. In a somewhat articulate or cogent manner, you feel like, okay, I guess they're in a normal state for them. That just must be what they believe, which, I mean, I can think of specific examples that relate to your point of him saying problematic stuff, which was in the mm-hmm. same zone, but his actions were also and support for that person.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably part of what you're describing?
Yes, but I think about the fact that so many black people have Republican uncles that they don't shit on.
Right.
And probably voted for Trump. I don't know what the fuck. Like,
yeah.
He's just hyper visible at the moment. Well, not at the moment. He's a superstar.
20 years. 20 yeah. years of being hyper visual and hyper influential. And I brought up the Life of Pablo in my reading of some sort of entry about it. I think it was probably on Wikipedia. And Kanye's, one of the quotes was like from a producer on some of the tracks was like, he specifically said, make beats that are not hip hop. Give me stuff mm-hmm. that doesn't sound conventional in any regard. And mm-hmm. when I was talking to Cadence Weapon about his most recent album, Parallel World, he said the same thing. He asked people to give him stuff that they thought wouldn't work. And that he would try to fuck with it. And then he used mm-hmm. he used those ideas. So there's on the mm-hmm. one hand, to me, like that record and Life of Pablo, they're challenging. They're beat oriented or rhythmically oriented, but the beats are all sort of messed up. Mm-hmm. Your record is like a breath of fresh air to me in the sense that it doesn't feel as it's not as jarring. The production mm-hmm. is relatively, for lack of a better term, smooth, and I kind of feel like I know where it's coming from. And to me, it's reassuring that way. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Definitely, yeah. That's how I like to kind of describe myself when I can.
You have the opportunity here to describe yourself as much as you want. I hope you'll take it. No, that seems to be yours. And you're saying that Cheap Limousine in particular has impacted maybe how you'll move forward in your work?
Yeah, he's just his production kind of just inspired me and inspired an entire kind of world out of me.
Yeah. Does that in terms of writing as well? Had you written most of the raps on this record before you received the tracks, or do you not work that way?
Oh no, I definitely get the beat first, okay. And then listen.
Right. So the record is called Head Above the Waters. Again, the narrative that I've heard and read, and I think I've even heard you talk about, is that this is about surviving, essentially, and right. overcoming your own struggles. Do you, now that the record's been out, it's been celebrated, people have processed it, Do you have perspective on your writing here? Like, do you have some perspective on what you had been going through as you were writing stuff and where you're at with it now that the record is out and you've lived with the songs a little bit? Like, does it inform your thoughts about yourself, so to speak?
Yeah, seeing people and what they write about the, like, in terms of like reviewing my album and seeing their perspective on it really changed the way that I kind of viewed what I was writing about and the impact it could have on a set of people. At the moment, I'm not thinking about those things. I'm literally just writing what I feel is appropriate for the times and what I'm going through. So I guess it just boils down to me just being very relatable and just always knowing what to say at the right time.
Yeah. And do you view your role now as someone who can help others, so to speak? I think we've been talking a lot about empathy and the power of music on communities, on individuals. Like, are you comfortable in a role where people are like, man, DJ, the record just saved me? Like, are you comfortable hearing mm-hmm. that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I am, because I've also felt that way about other artists. So I've always kind of used that as a standard.
Yeah. Okay. So you feel like you're good. You want to be part of people's lives and mm-hmm. you want your music to help them on some level, whatever, however it does it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, good. Some people, you know, the other thing about Kanye, I feel like he makes stuff and then doesn't give a fuck what people think. Or he says that, but I think he actually really does care. You care what people think and how the music impacts people. Is that fair?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, all right. So what's sort of next for you? I feel like we covered this earlier, and forgive me if I'm forgetting, but do you have a sense, like, have you been busy? Have you been writing a lot during this pandemic, or have you felt... I've talked to artists who've said both. I'm using this time creatively. Others who have said it's so depressing. I can't think of how to capture it or why I'd want to capture it even in my art mm-hmm. right now. Have you been writing during this time?
I think I teeter between both of those extremes.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, every day, literally every few hours feels different than the previous hours. Mm-hmm. But do you feel like you have songs ready at this point?
Oh, yeah. I have another project I'm coming out with in September. So I'm definitely still working and creating. When I can, though, I don't ever force it.
Okay.
That's where it kind of makes the most sense that I don't put the pressure on myself to create. If it's there, then it's there.
Right.
And I'll do it.
Right. This other project you described coming out in September, that's exciting. Is there anything you can tell us about it at this point?
It's just going to be a little 6-song EP with familiar faces and just something to end the year off nice on. Hmm. And to keep that little buzz going, you know?
Yeah. You tend to write in these sort of 6-to-8-song blasts, don't you? Like, when you put out stuff. Is that fair? Like, almost EP style.
Yeah, I don't want to overwhelm people. It's overwhelming. 12 songs is overwhelming.
Do you prefer yourself to when artists put out shorter stuff? Shorter records?
Definitely. Because I prefer it be shorter and have the quality than have a bunch of filler.
Right. Fair enough.
You know?
Yeah. No, totally fair. Okay. Well, if people want to learn more about you and your work, where would you like to sort of send them online at this point?
You can definitely see everything available on my website, justdjsb.com. But if you want to really get in touch with me, like, real time, that's going to be my Instagram and my Twitter.
Okay.
Which is DJSB. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So we'll keep an eye on those. By the way, are there vinyl pressings perhaps in the future?
Maybe in the future. I wanted to do vinyl for Head Above the Waters, but everybody I went to was like, yeah, there's a 4-to-6-month wait.
Yes.
I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah, that's right. The pandemic has created these delays. Okay. I just, mm-hmm. you're not averse to it. Like, you would do it if you could.
Yeah. And I don't like having people wait very long for my merch.
Right.
I feel anxious that somebody is waiting for something in the mail from me.
That's very considerate. You seem very considerate, if I might say.
Yes, I try to be. As a fan of music, I it helps to be a fan, because yeah. then being an artist, you kind of have both outlooks.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm hoping we can go out on a song, DJ, from Head Above the Waters. And if that's possible, do you mind picking one and also maybe explaining why you chose it?
Oh, sure. Maybe you could go out on New Harrison, because that's your boy, that's my boy. And it's a good vibe.
It seems to me that the title was probably the name of the file he sent you. That's one of the few where I'm like, New Harrison. Is there a reason it's called New Harrison beyond that?
I actually just had like, yeah, I was just like, yo, this is New Harrison, enjoy. And then I just named it New Harrison.
No, it's great. Okay, that's cool. Well, yeah, as I said, I'm a big fan of Harrison. And I'm a big fan of you, DJ. So thank you for this time. This is New Harrison from the amazing record Head Above the Waters. And DJ, thank you again. Like I say, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. And I wish you the best of luck in the future.
No problem. You too, man.
I'm back by popular demand. I stay on point, John Stockton with the raps. The flow stay heat like a rocket when it blasts. Certified in these streets, you just popping on the gram. Designer on the face just to cover up the bags. This ain't a race, I'm still running up the tabs. Don't get offended, I'm just trying to get the cash. And the meter keep running like I knocked out in the cab. Where the fuck have I arrived? I'm in the waters trying to keep from going under. Never was given instructions, I just made something from nothing. Now I'm loving the life, painting pictures with a canvas of size. I'm not sure what to do at this point, I didn't plan to survive. If you ain't know, that's because I got a master disguise. Now I'm set up like Steve Nash, pass me a dime. It's like that y'all, I don't really give a fuck about it at all. It's like that y'all, I don't really give a fuck about it at all. It's like that y'all, I don't really give a fuck about it at all. Same thing that try to blackball me, forgot about two things.
Oh, they must have forgot about me. That would explain the sheer lack of preparation. You said I changed, y'all should have changed, you hella stagnant. Your pen and page and leave it at its early stages. I wish you better days, but later days to the weekenders. I live my life all through the week, I'm one of them deep enders. Swimming in it, sipping vino from my decanter. I'm fancy now, I like my shit to pour from decanters. That's just what it is, I guess I've got with tea banter. No more corny talks with niggas who can feel your aura. Or you an empath, make pass for my swift departure. I give you 10 taps till you dearly depart us. Ain't no frills you can shop us, there's really no meal that could hold me. Hungry as Phil, uncle homie. Look here, it's real as my Sony. I lose my chill, you'll be sorry. Boy, my lead world goodbye Corey. I think referrals are corny. I shake your hand just to know you won't take your chance, I implore you. It's like
that y'all, I don't really give a fuck about it at all. It's like that y'all, I don't really give a fuck about it at all. It's like that y'all, I don't really give a fuck about it at all. Same thing that try to blackball me, forgot about two things. I'm back by popular demand. You don't know shit, you in the barrel with the crabs. The flow so slick that it be slipping through the cracks. On my solo shit, I need them riches from the rags. My coat stay clean when I kick it in the lab. And I got smoke for the snakes that wanna slither in the grass. Niggas sneak this in, but that won't get you any cash. Gossip to women, you think that's gonna get you ass? Pathetic. It doesn't always work out in the end, I get it. Instead of waiting on niggas to do it, I did it. It always makes you wonder, but I am on track. Now a nigga at the front of the train like the conductor. My cash automatic like Jordan was with the jumper. This shit is not the lotto, I'm not concerned about numbers. I just wanna give the biggest crib to my mother. Leave when it's winter, then return when it's summer like that. That y'all, I don't really give a fuck about it at all. It's like that y'all, I don't really give a fuck about it at all. It's like that y'all, I don't really give a fuck about it at all. It's the same people that kind of blackball me, forgot about two things.
Thank you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Very, very special thanks again to Deja SB for appearing on this, the 638th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcast. If you can't find an episode that you've heard about, you're looking for it, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit my worldwide website, vishkana.com. You can also like Creative Control on various social media, I guess Facebook. There is a Facebook page for the show, and sometimes people like that. You can follow the show on Twitter as well, at vishcreative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram, at vishkana. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this podcast. $6 or more a month grants you access to exclusive content from my audio archives. Sometimes, have I done any video archive stuff? I probably could. Gotta dig into some hard drives. But anyway, that's between me and my machines. In any case, $6 or more a month. Again, this is monthly flexible. You can change, you can alter things, you can cancel, whatever you need to do. But $6 or more a month grants you access to exclusive content. And also, if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, please message me on Patreon and I'll get you one while supplies last. Thanks again to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, which was the city of Guelph was mentioned on this episode, surprisingly. And also, I want to thank Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. All of them provide in-kind support for this show, and it means a lot to me. I miss all of those places. I want to visit them sometime in the future. We'll see if it happens. I also want to thank someone else I want to visit, Jim Guthrie. You can learn more about Jim Guthrie at his website, jimguthrie.org, and you should. He lends me some music that I play on the show, and he's a mensch. He's a wonderful young man, that Jim Guthrie. So learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode with Deja. I hope you enjoyed it. If you're a fan of Deja's, or if you've never heard of them, now you know something, and you know a little bit more about me. I was a little blabby during this episode. I could tell. I had to edit the thing, you know, and I'm like, just shut up. What are you? Stop it. But it happens. I was chatty, and Deja was great. Chatty as well. Got into some stuff. Hope you enjoyed it. And if you did, consider subscribing to Creative Control, the podcast, or following it and telling your friends to do the same. Spread the word about the show if you can. That means a lot. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you very soon. Bye for now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.